Wait a minute. Have you heard the Whistler? Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Yes, it's time for another strange tale by the Whistler. Each Wednesday evening at this same time, the Whistler brings you an unusual story of conflict and emotion. Tonight, My Love Comes Home. There's a man who sits at the bar of a waterfront saloon in New England tonight. A man you'd pass on the street and never notice. Unmarried, 45, a truck driver by profession. Ordinary, except for one extraordinary fact. He has held the lives of three people in the palm of his hand.
How will it be, Eddie?
Yeah, beer, I guess.
Right.
Hey, give me that paper over there, will you?
Hey, sure. It's full of that murder case in New Bedford. Here's your beer.
Yeah, thanks.
Smooth trip tonight?
Yep. No traffic, no nothing. You know, if there's one gripe I got about my job, that's it.
Yeah, what?
Nothing ever happens.
Yes, Eddie the truck driver with the power of life and death over three people continued to sit reading the paper in the New England bar and drink his beer. The amazing chain of events which had given him this power began 2 months before at an airfield in northern New Brunswick. Sam Hardesty, a bush pilot, sat in the office writing a letter.
And if things go as expected, I ought to arrive on the 15th. I've looked forward to this for so long, darling, through all the long months in this God-forsaken wilderness. Huh?
Howie! Six below on a 40-mile wind. Well, I could never got that crate down tonight. What's doing, Sammy boy?
Writing a letter to Helen.
Oh, that's great. I'd like to see that. Loyal husband, devoted wife, month's leave, fireside, and slip.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. It's great if it works.
Don't worry. It works.
Yeah, that's what Frenchie said.
What does that mean, Bruce?
Well, it means that sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
What about Frenchie?
Well, he had a month's leave, only he didn't write his wife he was coming.
Well?
She was gone when he got home to Montreal with another guy.
Well, so what?
So, a guy away from home 6 months at a crack better be ready for it when it comes. They're all the same. There isn't one who'll play second fiddle to a DC-3.
If that happened with Helen, I wouldn't want to live anymore.
I've seen it happen, Sam. A lot of times.
Frenchie didn't write.
He wanted it to be a surprise. Hey, why don't you turn it up?
I want it to be a surprise, too.
Well, all I know, Mr. Hardesty, is that she closed the apartment, said she was leaving New York for a month or so, going to Cape Cod.
Cape Cod in the middle of winter?
A little town called Oyster Cove. She's taken landscape lessons from an artist up there. I think you remember him. Jeff Christie?
Yeah. I remember him.
Well, of course, Sam, darling. Jeff and I didn't know what to think. You surprised us.
Please, Helen, just a minute.
Sam, dear, you've acted so strangely ever since you got in this afternoon.
Helen, this is the first minute we've had alone. Helen, it's not like it was, is it?
What are you talking about?
Like it was a couple of years ago, when you'd look up at me with your eyes full of it.
Well, Sam,
yeah, before you got interested in art. When we made a lot of plans about me going to Canada for the money and you saving it for me down here so we could get a real start.
I won't listen to this, Sam.
Helen, why are you here?
I told you, I'm learning to paint landscapes. And it makes no difference to me whether or not you choose to believe it.
Jeff said he thought you had promise. What does that mean?
Whatever you want it to mean.
All right, Helen, you needn't worry. I'll be civil to him. But you know the kind of guy I am. I'll never give you up to him. I'll kill him first.
Sam.
That's it, Helen.
All right, Sam. That's it.
With the prologue of My Love Comes Home, CBS brings you another strange tale by The Whistler. You know, it took 12 million determined young men to keep your home for you. Men who were willing to give up their homes and apartments and their jobs and families to protect yours. 3 million of these same young men now have no place to live through no fault of their own. And it's going to take a long time to build housing to accommodate them. And many of them, even men with families, are sleeping in automobiles and public parks. You can help by moving over just for the time being. By making any spare room in your house available to a veteran, and if possible, a veteran with a family. If you have space or know of any, call your local veterans organization or housing authority. And do it now. Now, back to The Whistler.
Nothing ever happens to Eddie, the truck driver, sitting at the bar at Plymouth reading his paper. Eddie, the truck driver, the man who held the lives of 3 people in the palm of his hand. One of the lives was Sam Hardesty's. Only Sam didn't know it, did you, Sam? The world was falling around your ears on those first awful days at the Cape as you watched them together, as you tried to be civil to Jeff, as you promised her. As you struggled to ignore the tension that mounted in the strained silences that came so often, making you remember what Bruce told you before you left New Brunswick.
They're all the same. I've seen it happen, Sam, a lot of times.
Yes, Sam. The first 2 days were almost unbearable. And on the third day when they left for the point, you couldn't stand the silence and spent the afternoon in a bar in the village alone. But they were at home that night when you returned, having cocktails. And there was nothing to do but join them.
How about another, Sam?
I don't know. I was drinking this afternoon. My head's kind of thick. Maybe I'll better skip it.
Not backing out, are you, Sam?
No, Jeff. Not backing out.
Come on, Sam, darling. Join in. The shaker's full, Jeff. Pour him another martini.
Sure.
The last one tastes a little weird.
Well, hard to get good vermouth these days. Here you are.
You have anyone?
Not this round.
Helen?
No, thanks, Sam.
Okay, I'll drink along. Go.
Show Sam what you accomplished today, Helen.
Oh, Jeff, I don't want him to see it until it's finished.
Oh, come on now. Don't be modest.
Well, I still think it's a mistake to show it to him now.
She's a pretty remarkable girl, Sam.
Yeah. We seem to agree on that.
There you are.
The harbor, looking back from the point. And I've never seen a beginner handle the ocean like that.
You see, Sam, I do accomplish things while you're gone.
I never said you didn't.
Yes.
She does get things done while you're away for 6 months at a crack. Playing tag with the Eskimos. Forgetting all about it.
Who says I forgot about her?
I'm sorry. Here, let me fill your glass. There you are.
What did you do today, Sam?
Nothing much. Took a walk around, met some of the natives. There's nothing like a native or two to put a guy in touch.
Well, Cape Cod isn't much in the winter. Hardly anyone around.
The old reliables are here. It's surprising what a guy can learn. Sitting around in the general store, listening to the gossip. A guy can lose track of things. There's nothing but a DC-3 to shoot the breeze with. 6 months makes a lot of...
What's the matter, darling?
Nothing. Nothing's wrong.
It is a fiddle, aren't you, Sam?
Sure.
Have another martini.
Yes, you think you'd better?
Sure, give me another martini. Made a pickup.
Got the shaker right here.
Fill her up.
He's all right. Here, Sam, I'll fill your glass.
Fill her up.
Have another.
Fill her up.
Fill your glass.
Fill her up.
And the last thing you remember, Sam, is drinking that martini. Things begin to fade right after that. Helen and Jeff receding into the purple clouds closing around you. The next thing is the water, ice cold water biting through your body. You're struggling to get to the surface. Then, air. Great lungfuls of it, and the feel of something solid to hold on to.
Bridge. Yes, this bridge.
What?
I remember. I'll hold on for a while. Rest.
You cling to the bridge piling, Sam, fighting the tide trying to sweep you out into the Atlantic. You've hit your head somewhere and it aches. But the cold water has cleared it so you can sink.
Where's the drinks? The drinks were drugged. They tried to kill me.
Half hour later, you're staggering through the little village of Oyster Cove, dark and silent in the hours before dawn, past a row of cabins facing the sea, vacant for the winter. You find a piece of scrap iron and break into the last cabin.
There.
And a minute later, you're wrapped in a blanket, resting, thinking it through again. There's a blackness inside you, a hopeless, heavy weight in the pit of your stomach, a feeling that there's nothing to live for, and a strange half-wish that they'd been successful when they tried to kill you. Then your eye strikes something on the wall in the corner.
I wonder...
Number, please.
Still connected. That's a break.
Number, please. Number, please.
Operator, give me the... No, wait a minute. No. No, not the police. They tried to kill me. They committed murder. At least it was in their minds. Why shouldn't they suffer for it? Why shouldn't they suffer for it?
Number, please.
I want long-distance, operator. Get me the night editor of the New Bedford Gazette. I got a story for you.
Who's this?
Oh, there are reasons why I can't tell you. You got your book?
Yeah.
Put this down. Sam Hardesty, a pilot for North Canada Airlines, was murdered tonight.
Now, wait a minute.
Put it down. You can check it tomorrow.
Okay. Go on.
He was drugged and hit on the head. His body tossed into Oyster Cove Inlet from the bridge at 2 this morning.
Yeah?
That's all.
Who are you?
I can't risk getting mixed up with the police. I know it's true because I saw it happen.
You realize I'm going to check this?
That's great. Check all you want. No telling what you'll uncover.
Fair enough.
Okay. You take it from there.
Yes, Sam. There's a way to make them suffer for the crime they committed in their minds. It wasn't their fault you didn't die, that the drugged liquor wasn't enough, and the cold water of the inlet brought you back in time to save yourself. You examine the cabin carefully. The electricity is on. There's plenty of canned food and a radio, wooden shutters over the windows for privacy. There's nothing to do now but wait, Sam. Things will begin to happen in a matter of hours. The first thing, of course, will be a curious representative of the new Bradford District Attorney's Office dropping in to see Helen.
You've got to understand, Lieutenant. I tell you, I don't know any more about it than you do.
Wait a minute, Mrs. Hardesty. I'm not accusing you of anything.
I'm aware of that.
Well, you act as if I were. Now, you say your husband had taken too much to drink.
Yes. We left him alone in the living room for a moment.
We?
Jeff and I. I mean Mr. Christie. We only left him for a few minutes. Then I called to Sam, and there was no answer. He was gone. We took the car and looked for him.
And you couldn't find him?
That's right.
He's a pilot, huh? Away from home for long periods?
Yes. Canada.
I see. Keep us informed of your whereabouts, Mrs. Hardesty. We might want to get in touch with you later.
Strickland speaking.
Hello, D.A. Lieutenant Johnson. I just talked to them both. Nosed around town a little bit, too.
What about it?
Could be. The makings are all here.
Still might be a hoax, but we can't take a chance. We'll drag the inlet tomorrow.
Right. And by the way, Chief, about the release to the newspapers, I'd say something to the effect that an anonymous phone call was received indicating that
there might have been foul play in connection with the disappearance last night of Sam Hardesty, Canadian bush pilot. Police were unable to trace the call and suspect it might be the work of a crank. Since there is no evidence Hardesty is actually dead, a search of Oyster Cove Inlet is planned for tomorrow. Now the football scores.
No evidence. Nothing to indicate I'm dead. Now I'll have to make some evidence.
No evidence, Sam. It might be the work of a crank. You lean back and think. No evidence. The fog is thick over the inlet that night when you arrive at the bridge. Look it over carefully and listen for a minute. It's deserted, quiet as a tomb. You prick your finger, put a few bloodstains on your initialed pocket handkerchief, hang it from a bush near the shore as if it had blown there. You find a skiff at the jetty. Row out to a line of lobster pots anchored near the bridge. Pull up the nearest one. Take off your wristwatch. Break the band. Smash it on the gunwale of the boat. Tangle it securely in the lobster net and let it down again. The newspapers ought to have a fine time with that.
Hello, press room. Listen, hold everything on the afternoon edition. Take this new lead on the Hardesty case. You ready? Police announced a startling new development in the Hardesty case early today when the missing man's wristwatch
was discovered tangled in a lobster net anchored near Oyster Cove Bridge, purported site of the murder. A bloody handkerchief bearing Hardesty's laundry marks and initials was discovered in a patch of underbrush near the site. Current opinion is that the man was murdered. Body thrown from the bridge and carried out to sea by the receding tide. Mrs. Hardesty and Christie, last to see Hardesty alive, were ordered to report to New Bedford for questioning.
Well, they're playing right into your hands, aren't they, Sam? Now, one more thing. One more ought to do it. They're both in New Bedford now, and the house on Shore Road is vacant. You still have the key, and you remember an item in the living room you might be able to use. Yes, Sam, one more ought to do it. Two hours later, you're back. You place the item on the table before you. Get out pen and paper and begin to write.
Dear Al, I'm writing you this letter because you're my brother and the only one I can turn to now. Helen is in love with Jeff. She insists on a divorce.
Where did you get that letter, Lieutenant?
Now, let me finish. She insists on a divorce, but I can't go through with it. I know if I don't, they'll do anything, even kill me. That's all. You never finished it.
Tell me, where did you get it?
It was stuck between the pages of a book you took out of the Oyster Cove rental library last week. This lady just brought it in.
Why, I never returned the book.
What about that, Miss Foss?
It was returned through the slot in the door. I found it on the floor when I arrived this morning.
I told you he's still alive. That proves it. Sam wrote that letter. It's in his handwriting.
Sure he wrote it. Question is when. The library's only open one day a week. It could have been returned any time after last Wednesday.
I tell you, it was there in the house yesterday. He broke in last night when I was gone and stole it.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Hardesty. I don't believe you. You and Christy report tomorrow for the preliminary hearing. That's all.
Well, Sam, it took just 4 days to do it. You ought to be satisfied now with Helen and Jeff facing a murder charge. You tell yourself over and over, 10 times, 100 times, that it's right, that they committed murder in their minds, that they must suffer the consequences. It's midnight when you leave the cabin and walk down to the deserted road. 2 in the morning before a truck finally comes by and stops for you. The driver's name is Eddie, and you wish he wouldn't talk so much. But you haven't any choice, and he's going in the right direction. North, towards Canada.
Yeah, sorry to take you out of your way, pal. Got to pick up a load of fish at Stillport. Of course, you're lucky to get a ride at all this time of night.
Yeah, I suppose I am. Where are we now?
Well, them lights up ahead of the airfield. 10 miles from there to Stillport. We can get back on the track up at Plymouth.
Back on the track?
Yeah. To Canada.
Huh? What made you think I was going to Canada?
Well, that's where you was going the other night.
What other night?
Hey, what's the matter, you pal?
Tell me, what other night?
Well, let me see. The last time I come through, Friday.
What happened Friday?
I picked you up, just like tonight. I thought you knew. Oh, sure. I'm a dunce. I should have known.
What?
Well, you couldn't remember anything. You're as drunk as a skunk. Standing in the middle of the road and waving your arms.
Listen, listen, Eddie. This is important.
Huh?
Where did you pick me up?
Just outside Oyster Cove, about 2 in the morning. You changed your mind about Canada, though. I had to let you out.
Where did you let me out, Eddie?
At the bridge.
At the airport over there?
Yeah.
So stop, let me out.
Huh? Again?
Stop, I said!
Okay, pal. You're the doctor.
A million things hit you at once, Sam. He was telling the truth. Everything Helen said was the truth. And in 4 hours, she'll stand up at the hearing and be charged with your murder. There's one way you can stop it, Sam. One way you can get there in time. There's a plane warming up on the airstrip, and you stand in the shadows watching as the pilot gets out and walks across the field to the hangar, where a mechanic in grimy overalls stands in the circle of light, leaning against the door. Quietly, you move toward the plane on the far side. You can see they're talking. They can't see you.
Better gas her up, Marty. Ready to take off.
Plenty of gas in her. I checked the indicator.
Better check the tank. Indicator went on the blink this morning. Only about 5 minutes gas, but... Holy cow! Somebody's taking it off!
It was the only way, Sam. You'll have to make it right later. The lights of the airport fade behind you as the plane swings southwest toward New Bedford. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, plenty of gas. You're sure now that you can get there in time to stop it. The shortest route lies straight across the wide mouth of the Sound, and you look down at it, stretching below like a huge funnel, with the Atlantic at one end and Oyster Cove at the other. Then it happens. The motor begins to cough. You look around at the indicator, full tank, enough for 3 hours. Frantically, you work the thrust.
The gas is running your gas. The fuel line, maybe, or the pump. I gotta make it, baby. Don't let me down now.
The motor dies. The nose goes down. Nothing under you but water. Nothing within gliding range. You're going to crash, Sam. You pull back the canopy, start to climb out of the cockpit.
Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story. This is an emergency. This is America asking you to move over and make room for a veteran. That extra unused room, that attic, that garage, any kind of shelter to keep these men and their families under a roof. If you have such a place or if you can make one available, communicate with your local veterans or housing agency. But do it now. This is an emergency. Now back to the Whistler. It was a long 6 weeks, but Helen and Jeff were hopeful. The state didn't have much of a case. The disappearance of Sam Hardesty was still a disappearance. In spite of the bits of incriminating evidence that came from nowhere, in spite of the gossip in Oyster Cove, yes, Helen and Jeff were hopeful for one very solid reason.
They haven't got a case without a body. You've got to remember that. I've been a lawyer for 20 years, and I've yet to see a conviction where they...
There's a call for you, Mr. Madsen.
Thank you. Excuse me a moment, will you?
Of course.
Chin up, dear. We're going to make it.
I don't know, Jeff. I don't seem to care much anymore. We did kill him. If he's alive, he'd have shown up somewhere by now, and it doesn't...
Please, Helen, darling, you've got to pull yourself together.
We're going to pay the piper, Jeff. We tried to kill him. Put the drug into his drink. It doesn't matter what happened after that, don't you see? That was the crime. The planning, the decision to do it. Just because he walked out somewhere before we could go through with it.
Shut up, Helen. Just see where that leads.
Mr. Matson believes in us, Jeff.
It's his business to believe in his client. His job is to get an acquittal, and that's what we're paying him for. Wait a minute. Here he comes.
It looks like something's wrong.
Yes. Eddie of the truck driver, the man who held the lives of 3 people in the palm of his hand, sits in a New England bar tonight, reading the paper, drinking his beer.
Yeah, can you beat this, Alec? Listen. Christy and Mrs. Hardesty plead guilty. Throw selves on mercy of court when husband's body found at Oyster Cove Bridge.
Yeah, the guy was a flyer, wasn't he?
Yeah. Flyer. You know, funny thing happened to me. About 6 weeks ago, I picked up a flyer down in that section. Said he was going to Canada.
How about another beer, Eddie?
Wonder why he made me stop at the airport that night. Wonder it could have been that same bum. Ah, that's crazy. Nothing ever happens to me. Yeah, Alec, give me another beer.
Next Wednesday at this same time, the Whistler will return with the story of Leora and Kent, of the blind rage which ended in murder on the 10th floor of a New York apartment, and of the terror which gripped them as they tried to find a way out. The strange story, Panic. Featured in tonight's production were Elliot Lewis and Ann Stone. This program is a featured production of the Columbia Broadcasting System and was directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Harold Swanton, music by Wilbur Hatch. The Whistler is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.